We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider, brought to you by AT&T, a proud supporter of Carolina Athletics.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, there is no doubt in my mind that we know that today is...
Here we go. Thursday, Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday. Throw the ball. Thursday. Thursday, today is Thursday.
Adam, Pod 201.
Is there a song today?
No, that only comes every 200 episodes. Oh. So go ahead and start writing the one for Pod 400 today.
Our oldest daughter is insistent that we need to, this is her words, drop that song on SoundCloud.
We can start then linking it on tweets that, like, get a lot of likes, and then you can be like, whoa, this really blew up. Check out our hot tune on SoundCloud.
I don't necessarily know how to drop something on SoundCloud, but you're always dropping stuff on SoundCloud.
I can do it.
So you could easily do that.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that. Hope everybody enjoyed Pod 200. We appreciate Jake Lawler and Zach Goins for joining us for that one. We had fun with the Pod 200 song. Somebody asked if we were going to give a cheat sheet on, like, all the Pod 200 references that were laid out during the Pod 200 song. But that would be – that would cheapen Pod 200, Adam.
Yeah, that's right. You have to go back and listen to all previous 199, and then you'll get it.
Yeah, then you'll understand that 4 minutes of audio completely.
And maybe you'll even be able to find the one reference that's not in those 199. It's a little Easter egg.
Oh, Adam, we have another great show coming up today. We have Senior Associate AD Clint Gwaltney is going to be with us. Clint is a former Tar Heel football player, and he tells some fun stories about his time here at Carolina. He was in the early days of the Mack Brown tenure when Coach Brown was here in the late 80s, early 90s, and then, of course, through to the late 90s, but that's when Clint was playing. So you're going to hear from Clint some fun stories about playing for Mack Brown. Clint has now moved up through the athletic department and is heavily involved with Carolina basketball, is good friends with Roy Williams. Clint, responsible for putting together the basketball schedule. We talk about all those things with him, and I think you'll enjoy hearing from Clint. He is just somebody who is been around Carolina athletics in a lot of different ways and has been involved in a lot of different kind of neat things. And so we'll hear from Clint here coming up in just a little bit. Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
We have a list. I have I have a what up. I have a I don't even want this.
Whoa.
I have a how can you justify that?
What?
So we're chock full of stuff and looking forward to getting to it. Adam, let's start with the Tar Heels here quickly. Don't really know if there's a ton of Tar Heel news other than a lot of the Olympic spring sports are moving into their postseasons or wrapping up their regular season in the case of baseball. And we say this all the time, this is a strong time period for the Tar Heels, and it's continuing that way. As we are recording this right now, both the tennis programs are into the round of
eight
in their respective tournaments. Women's lacrosse is into the round of eight in its NCAA tournament. The men's golf team is, as we are recording, taking part in its regional right now, had a very successful first day there. Softball is in the NCAA tournament. They'll be playing in Knoxville, Tennessee, after making it to the ACC championship game last week and having a nice run in that event. And baseball is finishing up its regular season, coming off a tough weekend against Pitt. I'm sure a weekend they felt like they needed to do more than they did, and when they only won one of those three big series, hosting NC State, who has had a solid year, was really hot early in the year, has cooled off some now. But a big series coming up in Chapel Hill, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series between those two teams coming up. So, Adam, just a lot of those spring sports, again, either nearing the end of their season into the postseason or whatever, and Carolina has some legitimate national championship contenders in those sports.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The Tar Heels have got a shot in several sports, and you're not used to mid-May being a good weekend to come to Chapel Hill. You come to Chapel Hill this weekend, you got big baseball series, you got women's lacrosses at home, in a big NCAA tournament game, so there's still a lot going on in Chapel Hill even at this time of year.
Yeah, I have been on the road with the Tar Heel Tour, and it was the way the tour kind of broke down this year, and it's been done differently in previous years, where it was really a large majority, all but one of the events was over these past 2 weeks. And we have one more event coming up in Wilmington on May 23rd, so still a little bit of time before that. But the first half, Coach Williams was at all of the stops in the first half of the tour, and then Coach Brown was at all of the stops in the second half of the tour. There was one date, as I broke many weeks ago, in Charlotte, that they were both there, but that was the only one. So Coach Williams was at the first half of the event with a football representative. Phil Longo was there some. Tim Brewster was there some. And then the second half of the tour, Coach Brown was at every stop with a basketball representative, including Hubert Davis was there some. Brad Frederick was at one. Steve Robinson was at one. So a lot of different basketball representatives. The last time when we did Pod 200, we had done all the basketball ones where Coach Wayne's had been with us, but not the Mac Brown ones when Coach Brown had been with us. And it has been fascinating being with Coach Brown some, Adam, and just being around him, not necessarily from what he said on the stage, although that stuff was good, and he talked about coming back and the decision to come back and kind of what his priorities were when he came back and just some stuff that is interesting, but even more interesting to me has been being around him away from that. And just to see all the things that you would expect from somebody who is such a high-level leader like that, you have seen from him, or at least I have seen some glimpses of this being on the Tar Heel Tour. And whether that is having some VIP meetings with really big donors to the Rams Club or something like that, and just how smoothly he handles those meetings, or I'll give you an example that I don't think he would mind me telling, where Jordan Brown, former Tar Heel running back, had committed to Kansas State and was going to transfer for his final year and is going to go to K-State. And so Coach Brown had learned about that earlier in this particular day, called Jordan Brown while I was in the car with him, didn't get him, but left a message. And it was just, oh, you know, Jordan, we're so excited for you. Thank you so much for what you've done. If we can ever help you, let me know. You're gonna fit in great there. They like to do this offensively. You'll fit in beautifully with what they like to do. Just the right move, right? And then there was another instance where one of his assistant coaches had been out on the road recruiting, and two or three things had come up, and so they were just talking about that and the way that he would handle, and he knew exactly, oh, yeah, that high school coach, this is really important to him, and we need to do this and this. And it was just fascinating to kind of see him working behind the scenes, and it was all relationship oriented, if that makes sense. Took phone call to Jordan Brown, the knowing that that high school coach, where this particular kid was, this stuff is really important to him. You know, let's make sure that we inform him about this and talk to him about. I mean, just watching that happen was pretty impressive.
We say it every time we talk about it. Up to this point, everything's been done the way you would want it to be done. And the call to Jordan Brown, there's no benefit to Mac Brown in making that call.
Right.
He's gone. You're not trying to persuade him to come back. It's just something that you'd like somebody to do if Jordan Brown was your kid. You'd want his former coach to say, hey, good luck. I think that's a great choice or whatever was said. So really impressive. What was the crowd reaction like to Mac Brown?
It was people were very excited. I think it was standing ovation for both Roy Williams and Mac Brown. And, you know, it was one of those where in the role that I am filling, when at the very beginning, at the ones where Coach Brown was, you know, it'd be one of those where it'd be like, don't know if you've heard, new football coach, you know, Mac Brown's here. And people are like, yeah, you know, it just people get, they were just excited to hear him. And it was a lot of fun. It's a grind, there's no doubt, but it was a lot of fun. We had great crowds everywhere, honestly. There was not one that you kind of left and went, eh, well, that was all right. But in particular, the group in Atlanta was really, really good. They were excited. The group in Raleigh was very good. The group in Charlotte from last week or 2 weeks ago was really, really good. And again, there was not a bad one. But there was just a lot of interest and excitement around Carolina Athletics. And Anson Dorrance was at a couple different stops. He was in Raleigh and he was in Greensboro and killed it because he's awesome. One thing that he said that I thought was interesting in talking about the new facility, the new soccer lacrosse stadium, he said, this has already helped us. He said, we're going to have the number I'm speaking as Anson Dorrance. I don't think I told this story already. He said, we are going to lock up or already have locked up the number one recruiting class till 2023. And he said, it's because of this stadium. He said, it's incredible. It's the best in the nation. And they hadn't even played a game in there yet. Remember? I mean, they'll be in there this upcoming fall. So he was terrific. Karen Shelton was at a couple different stops as well, and she did a great job. And if you listen to Pod 200, you heard me kind of do a little quick break-in to add this. I got to meet Courtney Banghart, the new women's basketball coach, for the first time at one of the stops. And, Adam, I'm going to tell you something. I was really impressed with her. She just was very – you can tell, number one, that she's very intelligent. And remember, we've talked – I mean, she went to Dartmouth, neuroscience major, coached at Princeton, so she has been around high academic institutions. And so that wasn't necessarily a big surprise, but she just hit the right tone of, I am very intelligent, but I am not talking down to you. I'm still very personable, and does that make sense? And I was just really impressed with her. I think, and that is in no way to say something negative towards Sylvia Hatchell, because Bubba said this on the tour about how we, Carolina, need to make sure that we find a way to continue to really celebrate Coach Hatchell and make sure that she has a more proper exit. There needs to be something to say thank you to Sylvia Hatchell for all the wonderful things that happened while she was the head coach of Carolina women's basketball. Courtney Banghart, and I think she's told this story publicly, talked about how she received a message from Sylvia, then how classy and you wouldn't expect anything different and positive Sylvia Hatchell was to Courtney Banghart about that transition, about what was going to happen with the program. And she, Courtney Banghart, really did a nice job kind of embracing what can be a difficult transition. And so I was really impressed. She was only at one stop, but I thought she did a really nice job.
Sometimes in the last 10 or 15 years, you've thought back to the mid-90s when Coach Smith was here and Mac Brown was here and Anson Dorrance was winning all the championships. And you think, man, I wonder what it was like to be at Carolina then with all these coaches who were at the height of their powers. And it was kind of like now.
Yeah.
Carolina's got some incredible head coaches right now.
Anson Dorrance, and I'm sure he's told this story in other places, but he told the story of just going to a practice with Coach Smith, and Coach Smith would say, hey, you're welcome to come, and if you're interested in, just watch how we run things or whatever. And Anson Dorrance was really – you could tell it was an extraordinarily impactful thing for him about how organized it was, and then I know he said this before, about how competitive the practice was and how essentially – score was taken in everything that you did, even if that was just running or rebounding or whatever. There was a tally taken, and then that was all added up in the end. And so you had a very clear winner and loser, and he's always talked about that and how important he thinks that is for his sport to have a purposeful practice as far as, hey, somebody's going to win what we're doing and somebody's going to lose what we're doing, because he feels like that just heightens what you get out of what you're doing. So that was just hearing him recount that story was neat.
We need to have him on again.
Yes, we had him on.
Maybe during the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, we had 7 different Tar Heels, members of Women's World Cup teams, including 5 on the U.S. team. We had Anson on, what, about a year ago? Or was it longer than that?
It was in former Pod World headquarters, I know that.
So more than a year ago.
Yeah.
So go back if you're, because obviously awesome stories from Anson Dorrance, who I don't think, and I'm going to forget the gentleman's name, but one of his very early assistants, maybe on his first staff, was in Raleigh. And he came up to me afterwards and was just saying hello. And he said, when I introduced Anson, you know, I went through all the impressive numbers and said something along the lines of just one of the best soccer coaches there's ever been, which is true. But his assistant, and again, the name is slipping my mind, but he said, Anson doesn't get enough. He created college women's soccer. He said, I don't think he gets enough credit for that. He said, I mean, he is the reason that the sport is what it is now, because it would never have it does not begin without Anson Dorrance. And so I just think it's worth remembering.
It's been interesting because I've been reading a lot of early 80s, late 70s newspapers here lately because it's fun, Jones.
Yeah, it's just why not?
And Carolina women's soccer of that time is very much like, oh, good job, girls.
Right.
You can go play in this other tournament and there'll be like 3 other teams and maybe you'll win. And if so,
great
gee,
job.
That's nice
right.
that you girls can get out there and run around the field. And he brought it from that to where it is today, where you've got the very best players in the world on that team at any given time in any given year.
I would really encourage you, if you are a Rams Club member, and if you're not, you know our feelings on this, you can join for as little as $100 a year. They have made strides in the membership drive. They're up to close to 17,000, but we're looking for 22. I'm looking for 22. Got to get there. So little as $100 a year, you can join the Rams Club. But if you are already a Rams Club member, my point of this is, I'd love for you to come to those Tar Heel Tour events. We really do. We have a good time. Yeah, it's about an hour program. You get to hear from different coaches, get to hear some fun stories, some kind of basic kind of team stuff, but then also some neat stories from them as well. And we give away prizes and tickets and sign stuff, and it's a good time. Get some food. Good time.
There's usually at least one time when at least one coach says, now don't go putting this on the internet.
Yeah, that's right.
So then you get stuff that you don't hear anywhere else.
Yeah. So really have enjoyed that, and we do, again, have one more stop in Wilmington on May 23rd. Coach Williams will be there and Tim Cross for
let's get this work.
Yeah, so you know it's going to be emotional.
The allergies are tragic.
Yeah, yeah, that pollen slowing them down. So looking forward to that coming up in just a little bit. Okay, Adam, why don't we get to our interview, and we'll come out of this with Clint, and we will get to Adam's list and all of our other stuff. This is Associate AD Clint Gwaltney joining us on the Carolina Insider.
We have got one of the most unique individuals in the Carolina Athletic Department on the podcast today.
Oh, that's nice of you to say about me, Adam. Thank you, buddy.
And that is because Clint Gwaltney played for Mack Brown football for the Tar Heels, but Clint Gwaltney also is on a day-to-day basis perhaps more intimately involved with Carolina basketball than almost anyone in the program other than, you know, the players and the coaches. They're important too.
Right.
But also Clint does other cool stuff too that people care about, like the Smith Center. And I think, Clint, you still are involved with the Nike contract. Is that true?
That is correct.
People love the Nike contract. I love the Nike contract. So we wanted to have Clint come by, and we appreciate you, Clint, giving us some time today here in our luxurious palatial surroundings.
This is a special place. Before every home game, I come in here and meet with the officials And as I tell everyone, all of them are wonderful human beings in this locker room. They are they are great people off the court. But, of course, they all have their challenges every now and again on the court. And as we discussed, I think it's probably the only locker room in America where they have a countertop that's built with part of the national championship floor from 2009.
Look, Mike Eads, we can't give you anything nicer. You have a TV, you have a urinal, and you have a cabinet. What more do you want, man?
What do you guys talk about right before the game?
You know, just make sure that if there's any, especially in non-conference games, if there's anybody new here, make sure they know where I am in case there's any issue in the game. I have been called over a couple of times. We've thrown one individual out.
Jones.
Brian Kersey was that official, and that was interesting. And then we also we had one last at the end of this game, I mean at the end of this season, where Jamie Lucky called me over and asked me to tell a fan that they needed to stop saying some things, and we did, and they did, and the, you know, those kind of things are interesting. But also too, I mean, you know, you just get to know them as people in here, and you know, like Mike Eads, you mentioned Mike Eads, he had a son who played college basketball, and I, you know, I remember when we were actually up playing at Maryland one time. He ran into at halftime to check the scores of his son, and you know, they're people too, and they make mistakes, as we're all well aware of, and we could do it better every time. but you know, and they know when they make a mistake, and they don't like doing it. And they're good people in the locker room all the time.
One of the most surprising things that's happened to me in the last 5 or 6 years of Carolina athletics is that my wife sat next to Mike Eads' wife at Cameron Indoor Stadium one time, and it was like when you see your teacher at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they have a life and a family, and they're real people. I hadn't really thought of it that way until that point.
They are truly real people, and you know, I've met a lot of their spouses, significant others, and again, they are real people, and they have children too, and those children are sometimes fans of North Carolina, sometimes fans of NC State, sometimes fans of Duke, and you know, that they have to monitor that, and that's troublesome for them sometimes. One official who will remain nameless. He tells the story about one of the games that North Carolina lost to, I think it might have been Maryland, and we're talking 10 or 15 years ago, and he calls home, and son answers the phone, wouldn't even speak to his father because of the way he officiated the game. So
I like that kid.
So, yeah. So that's, you know, it's like, here, Mom, Dad wants to talk to you. So.
And that kid was Marcus Guignard.
Clint, as Adam alluded to, you have a long relationship with Carolina and Carolina Athletics. Take us back and how that relationship got started.
Well, you can take it all the way back to when I was in high school, and I had played soccer and went to a high school in South Carolina, went to Eastside High School, won 2 4A state championships in soccer, and moved across the state line between my sophomore and junior year. My first high school soccer game my junior year, we lost 10-1, and my mother cried all the way home, like, what have we done to my son? So I decided, you know, that all the guys at my new high school in Shelby, all the guys, the girls like the football players, so I decided, what the heck, I'll go out and kick a football there. So I go out, I kick a football for 15 games. I got a date to the senior prom and a full ride to Carolina.
There you go.
So
good decision.
It was a great decision. So then, you know, I was signed under Mac Brown, showed up here having only played 15 games of football. Didn't know what, you know, the rest of it had in store. About the sixth game of the season, I was being redshirted, and the kicker before me missed one against NC State. And Coach Brown walked over. This was back when they didn't have wireless. So his manager, which was Mike Bunning, by the way, was trailing with a cable the whole way. And Mac comes flying through and says, next kick is yours. I don't care what it is. I said, okay. So there went the red shirt. And,
wow.
Went out there and played the next 3.5 years. So, but while I was playing, I switched numbers after my freshman year. I was number 84 and then went to 17. And it turns out it was John Swofford's number. Hmm. So, you know, by about my junior year, I told John Swofford, I said, first thing I'm going to do is take your number, then I'm going to come take your job. and Swofford will tell that story. We've talked about it for many years. And, I just had a desire to get into college athletics. So I went ahead and did some stuff for 3 years. two of which was working for Anderson Consulting, one of which was a master's degree in sports administration. Get on the phone in the spring of 1995 with Dick Bedore, who was then basically the deputy AD, even though that wasn't the title. And I had a 45-minute conversation with Dickie about what I should do. I was getting ready to go do an internship in Ruston, Louisiana, at Louisiana Tech. And Dickie told me that I needed to shelve that and come home, is exactly what he said. So started here in 1995 as an intern in the ticket office. 24 years later, I sit with you guys in a urinal, with a urinal here in the room.
Look how far you've come.
Whew, thank goodness you didn't go to Ruston, Louisiana. Yeah, boy, things could have turned out badly.
They ain't got this in Ruston, Louisiana.
When you're anticipating a red shirt and you're probably just sitting on the sideline wearing 84, hanging out, thinking like, yeah, all right. And then all of a sudden the head coach comes barreling over to you and says, next kick's yours. I have to imagine that's quite a moment. What do you just remember about your mindset and then going out there and doing it?
Well, embarrassingly enough, you know, having not played football and not really through the recruiting process like real athletes and real football players, didn't even understand what redshirting meant. I felt like I was worthy of playing, but, you know, you don't know until later in life. I mean, I, you know, again, become friends with some of the guys that I played for being in this business for so long, and basically they knew that that first year wasn't going to be real good, and they were trying to save me for years 2 through 5. So, but I had no idea what red shirt even meant. I wanted to play just because I'd always played growing up, and so I wasn't bothered by it. I was excited to get out on the field and play and be a part of the program. And, you know, hindsight, you look back and think, well, if I'd have been redshirted, I might have gone to a bowl game, because my 4 years were the 4 years we didn't go to a bowl game, things like that. But, I just was not educated enough. I mean, there was no social media. All that stuff, red shirts, gray shirts, it's talked about nationally all the time now. Mm-hmm. It's common vernacular. People know what that is. I just was not very savvy at that point in time about what that even meant.
We always see those shots on TV of the kicker as it's getting ready to be an important play in which the kicker will be involved. And I always think, I would not want to be that guy. What is that actually like to be that guy when you know it's headed towards that point that you're going to be running out on the field?
You know, I didn't have many of those in college because we you know, that was Mac's first years where we weren't real good and we didn't have many game-winner type opportunities. But I'll pull a Roy Williams here because he always equates everything to golf. And so I stand over a tee ball in golf and I'm nervous as anything there's ever been because I can't hit a driver. But you put a football in front of me right now and tell me to kick it through, that's what I do. And so it doesn't faze you because it's second nature to you. That doesn't mean you make them all. But, you know, I remember my first kick, it was against NC State. And Mac had told me to go out there. So, you know, 35-yard field goal, run out there, ball snapped, put it down, kick it through, good, drag off field. Don't even think about that there's 50,000 people there, you know, however many people watching it on Raycom, whatever it is, because it's just second nature and it's what you do. So when you're comfortable with what your skill set is in that area, it really doesn't bother you that much.
I would like to go back and see if I could find that radio call, and Woody's in there and has no idea that Clint's about to come jogging in there to be. And well, let's see here.
They're sending out a flanker. I'm not sure what's going on here.
You know, Woody had him like written down in pencil at the bottom, just in case 87, well, Gwaltney.
God rest Woody's soul. There is one that's out there, and y'all have heard it tons of times about Corey Holiday, when a star is born in Chapel Hill. But if you go to the tail end of that, because he talks and talks and talks about it, but then he goes, and as sure as death in Texas, Gwaltney tacks on the extra point. And so it's one of my favorites. So loved Woody. He was great.
Tell me why you didn't punt. I always like this story because you're a good punter too.
I was an All-American punter in warm-ups. And, you know, Scott McAllister, who he bounced around the NFL a little bit, and he and I would warm up together. And if you were an NFL scout coming out there, you might not know which one of us was the NFL prospect, because I could hit bombs. I mean, over 5-second hang time, 55 yards. I couldn't catch it from the snapper. I'm just telling you. I would stand back there, and I don't know. I mean, you know, I didn't play baseball really growing up or anything. And, you know, I had all the footwork necessary known to man. But dadgummit, if it was coming at me, snap, and I'd had to catch it and punt, I just struggled. And, you know, they stuck me in a couple times in the spring game just, you know, and I just – I was an All-American in warm-ups.
We could just hold it. See, can we change the rules where Clint could just hold the ball and then punt it instead of taking the snap?
Well, I always wanted to do the fair catch because then you can put it on a tee and kick it. You know, so I wanted to do that for like an end of a game, like 65, 70-yard bomb, just give it a shot and make that spot kick rule that not many people utilize.
As you mentioned, there was no social media in this era. Mm-hmm. What was it like to be a student athlete in Chapel Hill in the late 80s, early 90s? Maybe away from kicking the field goals and the bomb warm-up punts.
You know, it was fantastic. You loved walking around on campus, being affiliated with athletics. I was a little bit of an athletic junkie then too. Would go to women's basketball games, baseball games, volleyball matches. You know, tennis. Go see all of them. And the unique thing that we had back then. I mean, I guess ironically enough, I would say that our social media was training table, because how everybody stays connected now is through social media. But we had training table, and it was phenomenal to go in there and eat your meals and sit with swimmers and volleyball players and tennis players and wrestlers, and you know, there was just a unique family atmosphere of student athletes. I mean, you had your friends and people you might lived with that were not student athletes, but there was just a unique real sense of family, just everybody looking out for each other, both on campus, you know, when you're out at night, you know, visiting with people. It was just a unique and enjoyable relationship.
So you had a front row seat to Mack Brown turning the program from where he took it over to where he was going with it. What was it that he was able to do, he and his staff were able to do, to get Carolina football from where it was to where it eventually got to?
Well, he has such a blueprint for success, and I think that he took that from Tulane to North Carolina to Texas, and now he's bringing it back here, and he checks off those marks, and he makes sure that he unites the fan base. He makes sure that he brings the Letterman back. He makes sure that he has relationships with the in-state high school coaches, and he's so good at it. But the thing that I, you know, look back on being in this business now for so long, was the way he managed his staff. And you know, the first year that we were 1-10, you know, again, a 15. Now at this point in time, I'm 26 games in, 15 in high school and 11 in college. You go home for Christmas break and you come back and there's two new coaches on the staff. I don't even, at that point in time, didn't even know what that means. But Coach Brown, you know, has such a knack and understanding of back then, even before there was social media, just the temperature of the fan base. Mm-hmm. And he made changes necessary to make sure people understood that he knew that what we did was not, it was just not acceptable. And so he made changes, and he always made changes. But then once he got it going, then he didn't have to make changes because the staff was in place. So he knew which pieces of the puzzle he had to put together to be successful. And once he got it, he was cruising.
Was there a point where you realized the tide had turned?
You know, we all, I think, and again, some of it is Coach Brown has said it a lot, but I think when he took the red shirt off and brought Jason Stanisek in and we won that game, I think it might have been Maryland, and if that indeed is it, I mean, that's kind of when it turned. All of a sudden, there was and we talked about this a little bit last year that was difficult. There wasn't hope last year, and I think when Jason came in, rallied the crowd, we get the win, there was hope for the future. And I think that's really when we turned the corner. I used to laugh that Max said we were turning the corner so many times. It was like a dodecagon. You know, we had a 12-sided figure going here, and we were turning every corner known to man. But he's just such a motivator, and, you know, he's passionate about his student athletes. And I mean, again, when he got here, he's now, let's see, what is he, 68 maybe? So he was 38. He was young, and he was learning his own ways. He's gotten even so much better. And, I mean, you know, we all get the older we are, the better we are, smarter we are in a lot of ways. I mean, how many times have we thought back and said, God, my parents were really smart. They knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I just think he's gotten so much better. And just, you know, Bubba's hire of him is just so timely. So perfect. You know, hell, Mac hadn't lost a game in 6 years.
Me neither. That's good. Clint, I want to talk a little bit about kind of your relationship with basketball. You're very close with the program, with Coach Williams. Kind of how did that relationship come about? And for people who don't know, what exactly is your role within the basketball program?
That's a great – my role within the basketball program is to basically – do anything and everything to help make them successful. I you know, drill down a little bit more. I'm heavily involved in the travel side of things, making sure that we get where we need to and manage the postseason travel and things like that, and make sure that just try to make things smooth and take things off of some of the guys' plates when they need to be focusing on other things, especially the student athletes and game planning and things like that. And again, how does that evolve? I think it's just through relationship building. And you know, again, Joe Holiday and Coach and I walked for a number of years, and when Joe retired, Coach and I have continued to walk, and that's kind of a noonday every day kind of a thing. And mm-hmm. when we're out there, we're not talking about work. It's anything and everything but work. And it's just you know, it's a friendship. It's a working relationship. It's you know, it's fun. It's enjoyable. It has, just like anything, it has its moments when it's not. I mean, sometimes I'm the bearer of bad news, and that's not fun. But you know, when you have that type of relationship, you know, you go in and you deliver it, and then you move past it, and then you go out on a walk, and it's forgotten.
Mm-hmm. You have your hands closely in basketball scheduling. Jones and I had a conversation about football scheduling the other day, and someone had scheduled a game for 2035 or something.
It drives me batty. It's unbelievable.
In what ways is basketball scheduling different? Because that's you always hear about football scheduling. You don't hear as much about basketball.
In what ways basketball scheduling? I'll give you a perfect example. I sent an email less than 3 hours ago to get our final game scheduled for next year. So that's how basketball is. Basketball's changed a little bit because we don't have as much flexibility. We lost two games due to the ACC increasing to a 20-game schedule. Mm-hmm. And as y'all are aware, we're now playing two ACC games, one in November and one in December next year. We're opening up the season with one on, I think it's November 6th, and then we're going to go on the road somewhere around December 7th or 8th. And so that took the opportunity to maybe play a home and home with Kentucky or play a home and home with Florida or whomever, takes that and makes it not as easy to do. And so so again, when you look at trying to balance a schedule where we used to have 9 road games, it gave you the flexibility to have a little bit more, go on the road and do some one-offs, and we just don't have that. And so we don't schedule out that far. We kind of try to schedule the events like the Mauis and the Atlantis and things like that. We might do those 3 or 4 years out in advance, but other than that, some of the stuff, unless it's you know, like where we might sign a deal with Wofford where we're going to play Wofford down there, but then they have to come back here twice, that's a 3-year deal, so that some of that gets a little out in front, but nothing is far ranging.
What is the biggest challenge in building a schedule, you think?
Well, it's kind of funny. Coach is much more willing to do a lot of stuff, but his staff does not enjoy it quite as much. So I get a lot of ribbing from them when we start at Wofford at Gardner-Webb, or when I come in and say we're flying to Gonzaga, you know, right. And I keep reminding them that the guy down the hall is the guy that said yes. It's not on me all the time.
Right.
But you know, Coach is easy to work with, and you know, you get to a point where you pretty much have a good idea of exactly what he's going to say yes to and what he's going to say no to.
We went through that period maybe 4 or 5 years ago where everybody had a grand idea because Carolina played on the aircraft carrier, and then there were 10 other ideas, 9 of which probably never made it off of paper. What were some of the – what you thought were the best ideas that didn't happen?
Well, you know, the one that did not happen, and it was a good, it was an interesting idea, was the barnstorming one, and Mark Hollis had pitched that to us, and it was with three other Nike schools, Michigan State being one of them, and we were gonna go up to play in Madison Square Garden, and then all four teams would travel on the same airplane, fly to Chicago, play in United Center. And you'd rotate who you played, and then four teams would fly together to Los Angeles to play in the Staples Center, and then fly home. And there was going to be some educational components. There was going to be some neat opportunities for fans and everything. But when you broke it down with the travel schedule, it was like almost going to be a 10-day event, and it just couldn't be pulled off. But I thought it was a pretty neat concept. It didn't happen, though. I've got one in the back of my mind that I'm working on, but I'm not going to reveal it yet.
Here we go, right now. Sound the air horns.
Well, my next question was going to be, has the window on those closed? But it sounds like you don't think so.
I got one up my sleeve. I'm working on. I gotta see if I can pull it off.
We're in favor of it.
Yes.
Oh, you would be in this one. I promise.
Clint, so when normal people travel, there are normal travel headaches. There's delays and lost luggage and all the stuff that happens in a travel. What are some of the travel headaches that occur when you're trying to move a basketball team from point A to point B?
Well, I think the biggest one, and I think y'all might have been a result of it as well, was when we were flying to Las Vegas a few years ago and the crew couldn't get there. And ironically enough, we are flying on a charter aircraft, and the crew is coming in on commercial aircraft, and the commercial aircraft could not get there. And so we were supposed to take off around 8 p.m., and we kept hearing the crew's going to be here at 10, crew's going to be here at 10:30, and we get to 11 and find out that the crew is, like, stuck in Charlotte and that we can't get them here. And by the time we could have gotten them here, their time had maxed out, and we couldn't fly. So we had to send everybody home or to a hotel and then reconvene the next morning around 7 a.m. and fly to Las Vegas. So those are challenges. The one that doesn't get talked about often is when you land, you want to make sure there's a bus there, because there's supposed to be a bus there, because that's not a good one. You're right. The luggage is a little bit easier, but one thing that maybe a lot of people don't know is that the men's basketball team unloads the plane themselves. Yep. And that's all to just expedite the process. Sometimes when you land at an FBO, charter aircraft, there's only two guys there to do the bags. It could take them 30 to 45 minutes to unload the plane and get the bus loaded. Instead, we all walk straight off the plane, the managers go stand in front of the bus, and then everybody grabs two bags off the plane, and the plane's loaded in less than 10 to 15 minutes. And I mean, the bus is loaded, and we're on our way. And that's something that's always been one of Coach Williams' things, and I think it's great. And when we do that, I think it just sends a message not only to our players about the way to do things, but also to the people who are on the tarmac. I mean, it's impressive.
Student tickets. Somehow I always hear your name involved from the Carolina side of things when it comes to how students handle their tickets. Is that fair? What is your relationship in that regard?
Is that fair? Wow.
Yes. Been waiting for that question for 20 years.
My name has been taken in vain on this campus so many times, it's not even funny. What I took a part in was implementing I was involved when it went from – I was here when it went from camp out to no longer being a camp out. Now, that was from the Office of Dean of Students. That was not the athletic department's decision. So then there was a distribution, and those distributions happened from about 1997 till about 2006. And then I was the one that helped move it to an online process and an online lottery. And I worked very closely with the president of the student body, president of the graduate student body, and you know, we were all on board, but I was probably the one that got taken in vain the most. But that's okay. I mean, I'm a thick-skinned guy. Hell, I was a kicker, so I mean, definitely got to be a thick-skinned guy. But you know, so yeah, I you know, when we tried to massage it and make it as good as possible. You know, there were times where people, you know, everybody would say, it used to be like when you tried to register for classes here 100 years ago, you call Caroline and, you know, it was busy, busy, busy. You know, people kept saying they never win the lottery. And then you go in and look and they never signed up for the lottery. Or, you know, people were like, we want to win the lottery more often. We said, well, okay, instead of getting two tickets, we'll take it to one. Well, nobody wanted only one ticket because, you know, if you got you want to be able to go sit with your buddy. Well, what we said is, okay, we started loading people in phases and said, well, if I have a phase one ticket and you have a phase two, if I have phase one, you have phase two, all I have to do is wait longer and I go sit with you in phase two. So, you know, we tried to make it as good as possible. I think that, you know, the student body in the last couple of years, both football and basketball, have really done a good job of coming out and supporting. And so, I mean, you know, it's the ebb and flow of mm-hmm. the way things happen with students. But, you know, I think they've done a really good job. And now the students don't even know who I am, so it's good.
Until Jones blew your cover.
Yeah, there you go.
Unfortunately, you know a lot about a lot of things. So this you touched on this a little bit. We've talked some in recent years about how venue capacities are going down across the board in sports,
right,
and college sports. What do you think about the Smith Center? Does it need to go down? Could it be right where it is? What would you do if you could do whatever you wanted to?
I do think that in a perfect world, we are probably about 3,000 large. We probably should be 18-ish. And part of that is just because of the fact that, you know, you can watch the game on your phone. And people can watch it wherever. I think the student attendance has declined. They have done a great job filling the seats that they have. But 20 years ago, their allotment was larger, and there was a need for that to be mm-hmm. because students didn't have the means to watch the games through different avenues, their phones, in their dorm rooms, whatever. So, you know, back in the day when this building was built at 21,000 seats, two or three Carolina games were on TV. Everything else, you had to be here in person to watch or listen to Woody on the radio. And so I think it was the right move at that time. But I think that a capacity of about 18,000 would just, you know, instead of being 2.5 times the size of Cameron, I think only two would be, you know, adequate. And, you know, you just would fill it up all the time. So even when you play in St. Francis, because it would limit the, you know, if you think about the fact that we have 16 home games, you take 3,000 seats out of here, that's 48,000 people that wouldn't get to see a game, and all of a sudden they'd have to pick a different game to come to. And I just think it would make there be more demand on the outside trying to get in.
Mention you having a front row seat to Mack Brown. You also have a front row seat with Roy Williams. Now, these are two guys who have reached, obviously, Hall of Fame level in their two professions. What does Coach Williams do so well, in your opinion, to be so consistently successful?
Well, I think everything that he's ever done, it's about players first, and that takes the precedence. I mean, we've all heard the story about when the president called and he said, "Well, you're gonna have to call him back because I'm in a players meeting." And mm-hmm. he puts his players first, and he has such focus. I mean, we've all been around him. All three of us have been around him, and his attention to detail and his attention to time management. And you know, if Coach Williams says, you know, I'm going to meet you at 12:02. He's going to be there at 12:02. And, you know, his time is not more important than yours, and his players are more important than anything. And he takes pride in that, and I think that it's just unparalleled in the way he does that. He and we talked about it a little bit earlier, too. He's so focused on team goals, and he's so team oriented that he wants all five pieces on the floor working in concert to be successful. And I think that's why he sometimes we don't always have elite talent, and we are successful with above average talent, and that's because he can get the most out of those guys, and he just has a knack. And I say it all the time. I mean, you know, he's a Hall of Fame coach, but he's 10 times better the person. And I don't think that people who don't know him know how genuine he really is. And I think that's important to know.
You just touched on exactly what I was about to ask you. What do you think is the most common misconception of Roy Williams?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, he'll talk about Mountain Roy coming out sometimes, and that's when he gets really mad, or sometimes his language and dadgum and friggin' and all that. But you know, his basketball knowledge and ability to see things, it's just amazing. But deep down, I think people just don't understand or know how genuine he really is. I think that's just hard to anybody that is held on that type of a pedestal. I mean, you know, if you don't know him day in and day out, you just don't know how genuine. I mean, he's a normal guy. He's a normal guy with normal friends. Does all that same stuff. Goes out to restaurants. He's around in public all the time. The one thing that just amazes me, and again, these are things that y'all have also seen, is we'll come out of Clemson after winning a game, and there'll be 50 to 60 people around the bus, and he will take a picture or sign an autograph for one of those, for each one of everybody there, and then get on the bus. He does everything he can to be just a normal human being.
Changing gears with this question. So you work closely with the women's tennis program too, sport administrator for women's tennis. They have been extraordinarily successful here over the last, I'll pick a number, maybe wrong, 7 years.
Sure.
Well, what does Brian Kalbas do so well? How has he made that team from one that was pretty good to one that now is consistently top 2-3 in the nation?
I just think he's a great evaluator of talent, and he also he coaches them up when they get here. I love it when he comes in and tells me, we just got this recruit, and he says, boy, is she good. and so then it's interesting, for those who don't know tennis, you have lineups, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And, you know, you've seen McKenna Jones was, I believe she played 5 her freshman year, and now she's playing 1. And Jessie Aney was 2, and then she played 3, and then now she's played 5, and then sometimes she can move around. I mean, but they don't let those numbers get in the way of the common team goal. And he's so good at just he's such a great coacher of women, and they respond to him so well. And he just does a great job of evaluating talent and bringing them in and even making them better once they get here.
Switching gears again, we have buried the lead in this interview because this is the most important thing we'll talk about. You mentioned that you lived in the Shelby area.
I did.
What's the best barbecue in Shelby?
Bridges.
Which Bridges?
I think you get this right. It's been a long time since I've been there, but it's the one on 74 right there across from the mall, which is at Alston Bridges.
I think that's right.
Okay. So it's that one right there across from the mall.
Okay. Because people get angry about
best,
that.
Best hush puppies and sweet tea you'll ever have.
Wow.
Our interview with Clint brought to you by AT&T, proud supporter of Carolina Athletics. More for your thing. That is our thing at AT&T. A reminder about unc.edu. For 225 years, Carolina has worked to improve the lives of the people of the state of North Carolina. As the nation's first public university, Carolina educates and trains all kinds of professions, doctors, healthcare workers, teachers, entrepreneurs, scientists, and more. To see the impact Tar Heels make every day across North Carolina, learn more about what's happening at UNC. Real easy. It's unc.edu. Why don't you fire up that music? Because beneath the longleaf pines in the heart of North Carolina, it's a place where golf is more than a game. It's a way of life. It's Pinehurst, and it's waiting for you. Pretty excited, Adam. Jones golf season really gets kicked off later this week. I got a bunch of charity events coming up. Got an event coming up this Friday. Looking forward to it.
Is there a big battle to get, like, in the back end of charity golf season so that you'll be primed by then?
Yeah.
Like, they want good gems.
They don't even know. These guys on Friday don't even know how bad it's going to be. I hope they're not relying on me for any shots. They'll have to rely on me for the hilarious Tar Heel tales.
Which anything else is really a bonus.
Yeah. Quick reminder about UNC Healthcare, MyUNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with MyUNC Chart. You can visit myuncchart.org to sign up. Adam, how about this? UNC Healthcare, know your stat. Women's soccer, we were talking about Anson Dorrance earlier. Nearly 60% of all the championships won at the college level in women's soccer belong to Anson Dorrance and the Tar Heels.
That's pretty good.
Yes.
They Anson Dorn's, of course, also a World Cup winner as a head coach, and just super accomplished.
He's won everything there is.
Yes. Adam, should we get to your list?
Sure.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Wide variety of items on the list, starting with, as always, Red Panda. Many people wanted us to know that Red Panda was on E60 this past weekend. Did you watch it?
I did not.
I did.
Oh.
Because I like to prepare.
Yeah.
It was a good feature. Red Panda is a real person who has a real name, and she clearly works hard at her craft. One of the linchpins of the story was the Carolina-Clemson game at Little John in 2018.
No. The game that you and I were at.
The game where...
The game where we said that it was happening. That the slide had begun.
We were 1,000% right. That was...
Adam, that makes me feel pretty good.
We know our halftime shows.
Yeah.
When we tell you there's more than one quick change and original quick change is mailing it in, you need to take that seriously.
Yeah.
Because when we told you Red Panda was having some struggles, it turns out this was shortly after her unicycle had been stolen, which this piece included the security cam footage, which somehow we still haven't caught that guy.
I mean, there can't be that many 11-foot unicycles out there.
I wouldn't think so. So she was trying to make an older unicycle work, and she talked about how she went back to the hotel after that game, in which there was footage of her at that game, and she was in the foreground, and in the background were Ben Alexander and me. I don't know where you were. But I was kind of disappointed, and I put this on our Instagram story like a screenshot. I wasn't watching her. I think I must have been typing maybe like a text to you, like, get out here, Red Panda's scuffling.
Yeah, ASAP.
Yeah, and so verified we were definitely there.
Man.
That was the Red Panda identified low point. But shortly after that, when she got back to her hotel, she told it as that night. Her agent called her and said that the Warriors were going to give her a new unicycle, which, P.S., cost $25,000. I might rather have a car.
We were witness to history, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, that's like being there when Babe Ruth called a shot.
Yeah.
We were there. When 20 years from now, when people say, Jones, what's the highlights of your career? You can say, I was there when Red Panda turned it around.
A lot of things happened, guys, but that Clemson-Carolina game in 18 where Red Panda started to slip but then realized that it was a redemption story for her.
That's right.
Pretty big moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So, highly recommend that feature. Scott Van Pelt narrated it and did a great job, as always. then, so many other fun things. I really appreciate...
By the way, a lot of people have asked why you weren't on the Pod 200 song. I'm going to go and tell you, you don't want that.
Yeah, because we're trying to preserve your ears.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I really appreciated this tweet that I got from a listener. At Smooth Delicious.
Mm.
This gentleman's name is Sid. Sid writes, very kind man he appears to be. Dude, I love listening to your podcast. That was nice.
Yeah.
And you sound way younger than you look.
Wait, where is this? I never saw this. Did this go
straight? Because he just sent it to me.
Oh, just to you. Okay.
Yeah, he's just talking about me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Thank you, I think.
Nah.
But probably not. Thanks, Sid. there was some news on the front of not wearing pants.
This was an odd story.
Most of them are. Who sent this to us? Several people sent this to us. I hesitate to identify just one. Headlined, nude man shooting hoops told cops, playing naked enhances his skill level. All right, well, I think clearly we need to read more. A nude man found playing basketball last night in a, no surprise here, Florida park, told police that, quote, He feels playing naked enhances his skill level, end quote, according to an arrest report detailing the hoopster's bust for indecent exposure.
Well, I mean, you can't, I mean, you don't want your gear slowing you down.
I think that may have been the problem.
Yeah.
Responding to a call about a, quote, white male who was not wearing clothing, end quote, inside Candyland Park in Longwood, an Orlando suburb, a patrolman discovered this gentleman, who's named here, I think he's probably been outed at this point, shooting hoops while unencumbered by any clothing.
Yeah.
When Officer William Humphreys...
I just can't get my follow-through right.
...asked him what he was doing, the suspect, quote, stated he was working on his basketball skills, and he feels playing naked enhances his skill level. He was asked to put his clothing on, and he complied. A park employee had spotted him, bawling sans clothes.
Yeah, he was.
And dialed 911. Unfortunately, you're not allowed to do this at Candyland Park, and he was arrested and booked.
Can you imagine, what was it, like, that police officer rolls up, and he's like, sir, what are you doing? Shooting hoops, officer.
I'm balling sans clothes.
Think it's pretty obvious I'm working on my shot and my ball handling. Think it's pretty obvious.
While we're on the topic of pantsless incidents, Cary Grant tweeted this to us across the pond. And headlines it, the mystery of how a sober journalist lost his jeans in Phoenix.
Yeah, this was the story. I thought you were going to bring up this story first.
This is a tweet from Daniel Dale, who appears to be the Washington correspondent for the Toronto Star. So, you know.
And he was very clear that he leads a very, like, sober, clean life. Like, no vices.
Daniel tweets as follows, me and Airbnb, 7:55 a.m. Where are my jeans? I don't understand where they could be. Me driving to breakfast, 8:02 a.m. Ha ha, are those jeans in the middle of the road? Me, 8:05 a.m. after epiphany. And he tweets a video of him getting what appeared to be his jeans out of the middle of the
road.
But
he has no idea how his pants got in the middle of the road.
I never found that he had solved this mystery. He says, I do not drink or do the drugs. I don't know, guys.
Do the drugs.
He says, I have no idea. They must have fallen out of a bag. Several people let us know that DaBaby performed at the Rolling Loud Festival, which I know that you were on top of.
Yeah, but what's the most important part?
DaBaby was wearing a Carolina jersey.
Yeah.
A Michael Jordan jersey, to be specific. He also put some stuff on social media with him wearing the Carolina jersey. And because there was such a clamor about DaBaby, and then we also got an email about the group Grits, which I didn't know was a thing, but there is, in fact, a group named Grits. And so I listened to it. And I'm willing to, it was Mary Mercer who let us know about Grits. And they have a song, Ooh Ah, My Life Be Like, as you know.
Yeah.
That is used by one of the Fayetteville Woodpeckers as his at-bat song. Mm. Seth Beer, former Clemson Tiger.
Oh, that part I didn't know.
So I've listened to that song. I've listened to DaBaby's latest tracks. And I'm willing to give you the latest top four. This is pre-summer edition. Top rhymers in the game.
Jump back.
Always a big moment.
Pre-summer. We've got some movement on the list.
Oh.
Number one, J. Cole. I'm moving him up to number one. Big Tar Heel. As we've talked about, a lot of my rap knowledge comes from when I move my daughter's car in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I like that song, Middle Child, by J. Cole. It gets in your head. And sometimes when it comes on in the morning, I'm like, oh, yeah, J. Cole, good job, buddy. I've moved DaBaby up to number two. He wore the Carolina jersey.
Wow, that's a big jump for DaBaby.
I know. I'm willing to overlook some of his other transgressions because I feel like he's blowing up. I think we were on DaBaby way before anybody else other than Leaky.
Yeah.
Leaky tipped us off
to
this rising star, and he's now risen all the way to number two, top rhymers in the game. He's got a new song, Shug, that is dope.
Hey, Adam.
Don't listen to it with your kids.
Retweet.
Number three, Quando Rondo.
I'm a big Quando Rondo fan. Thank you, Coby White.
Yeah, because he's got the song ABG where he talks about leaky all the time.
Yeah.
So I like that. I support that. Number four, we got Lil Baby hanging on. I can't diss Lil Baby by dropping him from the list.
You're OG.
But he needs to come out with something new that's hype.
Yeah.
So that I can bump it in my car. That's your top four rhymers in the game. Pre-summer edition.
Yeah. Late spring edition.
Yeah. Get you right for your playlist for the beach.
Yeah.
Here at Memorial Day. We got a couple good emails that I enjoyed. Well, I enjoy all the emails, but these I thought we definitely needed to bring up. This was good from Matthew Crow in Monroe, North Carolina.
Would you like me to read it?
If you'd like to.
Sure. Well, you've done a lot of reading.
Okay. Well, I don't want to overdo it.
So Matthew sent it in and said he just wanted to provide a public service announcement to all South Carolina residents and a big what up to the South Carolina DMV. He said, attached is the South Carolina DMV application for special license plate. Please take notice on the top left corner on page 2 of the application, Adam. It says the only 2 special license plates offered at no additional charge are In God We Trust and University of North Carolina. Hence, there is no financial deterrent against obtaining a UNC specialty license plate. He strongly encourages all Carolina fans living in South Carolina, obtain your free specialty license plate. He said, please also note that a fan of Duke would be out of luck since that particular school is not available on a South Carolina license plate, while fans of that other school a little farther east would have to spend $70 plus the regular registration fee for their specialty plate. Suckers! Thank you to UNC and the South Carolina DMV for giving him $70 more that he can now donate to the Rams Club. Love the podcast. Matthew, what up?
That's an awesome bit of knowledge right
yes.
there.
Yes. So if you're a South Carolina Tar Heel, no need not to do it. You can get a specialty UNC license plate free of charge.
How did they work that?
I don't know.
Nice job.
Yeah. And thank you, Matthew, for bringing it to our attention.
Yeah. One other email, a follow-up from Kate Leslie.
Oh, yeah.
Had some incredible information. Remember, Kate is our ultimate correspondent.
We got an email about John Pearson about Ultimate. See, there are a lot of Ultimate fans out there. We're a pro Ultimate podcast.
Yes, not Ultimate Frisbee.
No,
that's for babies.
Hey, Adam, stop being so lame.
Yeah,
it's Ultimate.
So Kate follows up with 2 key pieces of knowledge. One, a historical monument.
Yeah.
The first point Kate wanted to make is Ultimate players drink a lot of pickle juice. Kate herself
just like Cameron Johnson.
Yeah, Kate herself has had her share of pickle juice during tournaments. It works like a miracle. Hmm. So there you go, Jones. If you cramp up during the next broadcast, pickle juice. Number 2, this is what is incredible. Kate once had dinner at Carrie Jones Elway's.
Oh, I didn't know what we were talking about. I was like, Academy?
Carrie Elway's childhood home in London. Kate ate there. Carrie Elway's mother was a booster for the Brown University rowing team, of which Kate was a part at the time. Historical note, the Magna Carta was signed in Carrie Elway's backyard.
That is incredible knowledge. It's incredible knowledge.
Right in his backyard. They're like, where should we sign this? What about Carrie Elway's backyard?
Yeah. He was in The Princess Bride.
Dread somebody Roberts.
Don't you know that?
There's a large stone engraved there on the believed site of its signing. How is that not at the top of his Wikipedia page?
I like how she said Adam as a fellow history buff. Like, yeah. I would have no interest in this at all.
Joe's doesn't care.
Adam, I know you sound like you're 12, but look like you're 72, so you'll probably like this. Jones is too busy doing some other stuff, making songs.
If you can't remember Carrie Elway's for any of his other incredible roles, remember that the Magna Carta was signed in his backyard. A fairly important document, I would say.
Guys, where should we sign this? There is but one place.
In many centuries from now, a gentleman will come along who will change the course of what they will then call cinema, but has not yet been invented. I would like to commemorate him. Hand me the quill pen and put the stone monument here. Here in Carrie Elwes's backyard, we have signed the Magna Carta and changed the course of human history.
What accent is that? And number two, now you don't sound so young, Adam, so that's good. Good job.
Right. Yeah, well, not when I'm signing the Magna Carta. You got to be older and more respectable.
Whew. Jared McCullen sent us an email as well. By the way, it's CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. Jared sent one in. He said, I know I'm late to the party on this, but wanted to send it to you. Talking about songs that pump him up for the Tar Heels and that remind him of great Tar Heel moments. My headset like went insane right then. I was just trying to adjust it, and all of a sudden it was like engulfing my head. What happened?
It's not just a windscreen. It's a whole headset screen.
I know. He said, this one is my all-time favorite and shares a YouTube link. He said the group name is Rudimental, and the song is titled Feel the Love. This song was put underneath the hype video that was made after the Carolina-NC State game, football game, the Geo punt return game, in 2012. Big shout-out to our former co-worker, Jason Andrews. Jason now runs his own production company, but Jason was the one who put that video together and used that song, and people love that moment, and people love that video. It is a great video to go back and watch because obviously it was just such a fun moment in the game. Jared talks about how great a play that was. He says, maybe the single greatest individual play in Carolina football history. And I will say, and we've talked about this before, I think modern Carolina football, and you can define that however you want, I think he probably has a point. I think it's the most memorable play certainly in the last, I'll say, 25 years at least for Carolina football. And, yeah, you could probably keep going back. But anyway, he said, the song isn't exactly my style of music, but after seeing this video, I downloaded the song immediately. Anytime it comes up on my phone, I have to listen to it. The notes of the song take me back to that day and the fond memories of that great day and game. So thank you. See, that's perfect.
That's a good one.
That's exactly what we're talking about the THSMLL. Trademark is that kind of stuff. It's perfect. Like, maybe Jared wouldn't listen to this song normally, but he has to when it's like, oh, there goes Gio down the sideline scoring a touchdown. Go Heels. So thank you for the emails. A couple people have said that we need to listen to the Pod 200 song on 1.5 speed. Have you done it?
I have not. Have you?
I haven't done it either. I've heard the Pod 200 song enough, Adam.
You've heard it on 1X.
That's
plenty.
Right. One thing, and David Staley said, even better than the lyrics, which were amazing, was the sheer enthusiasm Jones brought at the end of every verse. Hey, I was trying to follow Billy Joel.
Right.
That's all. Just trying to live off his inspiration
for
the song. No big deal. Okay. Adam, I have a what up. I have a how can you justify that. And I have I don't even want this. Hmm. Number one, my what up. People look at there, what's up? I met so many great pod listeners out on the road for the Tar Heel Tour. And I mentioned that last show, but it just intensified over the next week. So a big what up to all the pod listeners who came up and said hello. I took a bunch of arms crossed photos. So sorry, Adam. Loser Adam wasn't there.
Just draw me in the stick figure like usual.
Yeah. And so I took a bunch of arms crossed photos with folks. There are a bunch of pod listeners in Raleigh who came up afterwards and said hi. There was one, and I can't remember. I'm not good with names, Adam. I have to have them written down in front of me and you to be wearing a jersey with the number on it for me to really remember.
Was it Dick Grubar?
Come on. A young lady came up, and she was a big Carolina fan and a pod listener. She said her husband, though, was like a State fan. He wouldn't even come. Made her go solo.
Oh, that's not nice.
To the event because he wouldn't even go to the event.
Was he at home in his Spa de Ville?
Yeah, probably. Busting through the top of it. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you at least go with her? Like, be the plus one?
There's going to be snacks and beverages.
Yeah. Even if you don't like the people talking, you can sit there and have a couple beverages and be with your wife.
Yeah, enjoy the night with your bride.
Yeah.
You don't get many opportunities to do that.
Yeah, that's right. These kids, they grow up so fast, Adam. Yep. You're going to blink and they're going to be in college. So what up to all the Tar Heel fans and Pod fans. Had several in Atlanta who came up and listened down there. We got a great listenership down there and just great Tar Heels down there in Atlanta. One thing that's always nice about going outside the state of North Carolina, and I think we had 9 this year, 8 of them when we're in the state and then the one in Atlanta, because they normally, it's about that way. You'll do one, you know, we've gone to Greenville, South Carolina, we've gone to D.C., we've gone to Richmond, Norfolk. So you go to like some key areas outside the state, but you don't do many. They're always so excited when you're there. And I've said that about the D.C. club before, but it's always just great crowds, great time. What up? Adam, how can you justify that?
Ghost of that lady's husband.
Yeah, really. I do not have to justify!
How can you justify what you've done?
How can you possibly justify that?
So, I am driving to work in my now defunct car. My car has totally just gone out on me. Hmm. I'll give you an update next pod. I may be driving a new car soon, Adam. I don't even know.
That'll be a whole nother thing.
We're gonna give this one good effort to try and fix it. Pour some cash into it. See if it's gonna fix it, and if it doesn't happen, then we're just cutting ties.
After that, you're signing the DNR.
Yeah. We're getting out of here. But anyway, so there had been in my refrigerator that morning a salad. And my wife was like, oh, here's this salad in here. Why don't you take this for lunch today? If you would like, it was more like, if you would like this, take this for lunch. It wasn't like, take this salad for lunch. I said, oh, okay. So I'm driving, and I got to tell you, Adam, the salad smelled delicious. I was just like, I'm driving, and not often do I have this feeling, but I'm driving, I'm going, I'm really looking forward to eating this salad. Like, I was just like, this is going to be a really good lunch later today. I'm going to eat this salad. It's a healthy choice, and it looks delicious, smells delicious. So I'm driving. Now, if you're in Chapel Hill right now, if you're in this area, you know there's a lot of construction going on. Mm. That's constant. But there's construction that's directly on my route from work to home, so it's more important to me now. So I'm driving, and go to your mind. If you know Chapel Hill, go to your mind right now. And you're on 54, and you're coming into campus. Okay? You know where I'm going here? You're off of 40. You're going into campus. Mm-hmm. Well, they have one of the right lane is shut down over there. So I'm just driving. I'm in the middle lane. I know that right lane's closed.
Yep.
So I'm driving along. And, Adam, let's go back to a little story that we told a couple weeks ago, maybe even a couple months ago now. Some yahoo decides that he's going to try and wait to the last second to get over. So instead of just doing this in a normal manner, my man or woman, I don't know, I don't want to be judgmental here. This person zooms up and cuts in front of me right at the last minute. Okay? Now, normally, I make sure there is no space between me and the car in front of me to ensure this kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Right. Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. However, I must have been – I think the salad must have been in my head. So I was daydreaming a little bit about how good the salad was going to be so that I had opened the window, and that's my fault. Mm. But so this person, like, cuts up in front of me. So I have to slam on the brakes. Mm. Adam? I can see it right now in slow motion. The salad's sitting there in one of those giant plastic boxes that you have to close and snap.
Right.
It goes, and I try to slam my arm over to the passenger seat, and honestly, my first concern was the fancy backpack, which I was able to keep safe, but the salad, Adam. Boom, onto the dash.
Ooh.
Boom, opens up. Salad explosion in the car. Everywhere.
I can't repeat what the next few words out of my mouth were at that moment, Adam. But I'm going to tell you something, Adam. They weren't pleasant. And so then I get to the Smith Center, park, and I have to sit there and then spend the next 10 minutes picking up little pieces of salad out of my car. How can you justify that, Adam?
I'm impressed you didn't follow the person.
Yeah.
Just to say, you're going to clean up this salad.
I would just
you did this.
I would like you to know, sir and or madam, this salad, see this? This is because of you.
Yeah, you did this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to expect you to clean it up.
Yeah. All right, my final note, Adam, is I don't even want this. And it's a clear delineation here between my how can you justify that, because that's the guy cutting in front of me and making the salad fall, and then this I don't even want this. Have you seen this video where it's a doorbell cam where this person is going up to a door?
Is this the lady at the beach who stole the chairs?
No.
Or the snake that bites the guy on the face?
Yes.
No, thank you.
So this doorbell camera, and you know, a lot of people have this now where you're, not only is it a doorbell, but it's a camera so you can see who's on your front porch. So this guy who, I think it was like his relative's house or something, and he was going over to his friend's house or something and is opening the door or ringing the doorbell or something, and this snake was inside like a light. It was curled up inside maybe a front porch light. And so the dude doesn't do anything. He just walks up to the door, but you can see this footage on the doorbell camera. All of a sudden, this snake comes out of nowhere and bites the dude on top of the head, like around the forehead, like above his eye. And you can see this guy's face go from, oh, what? That really hurt, to, oh, my, that was a snake that just bit me. Adam, I've told you this before. The two things that disturb me the most in life are snakes and tornadoes. Meaning the tornado of snakes is the ultimate fear. But snakes and tornadoes, I don't want either one of them. Now, as I've gotten older, I've become more mature about the tornadoes. I can handle myself with that. I can get myself to safety if I need to. And I'm a weather watcher, so I'm all on top of it. Don't you worry. But the snakes, I can't – I won't even – I was with my kids, and we were at a park, and there was a dead snake in the woods. I would not even pick it up with a stick.
Oh, no.
I want nothing to do with snakes ever, ever.
You say that like that's unusual that you wouldn't pick it up with a stick. I wouldn't.
No.
No. No.
I do not even want this. Okay, Adam, anything else?
I'm kind of traumatized. Now, my head's going to be on a swivel when I walk out of here.
So we have a couple interviews in the queue. We are working on getting some more. And we're not going to be gone. We're going to be back again, not as regularly as we are during the regular year, but we will be back. Be back soon. Looking forward to it. Couple of reminders. You can always shoot us emails at CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. Carolina_pod on Instagram and on Twitter. And don't forget to rate, subscribe, comment about the pod on iTunes. Interact with the pod.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get out of here. We're going to let Clint Gwaltney and the RZA send us out on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Clint Gwaltney, and I'm a Tar Heel. See you later, Big Grizz.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.